So we're very happy to have Shay Chen today. So Shay is a professor at Caltech who has done many amazing things at the interface of condensed matter and quantum information theory. She's probably most well known for her work on her pioneering work on symmetry protected topological phases, which, among other things, earned her the prestigious New Horizons Prize last year. So we're thrilled to have her here to share her vision on such new horizons and frontiers at today's seminar. So Shay, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me here, and thank everybody for coming. And indeed, as Tim said, this is the thing I'm going to talk about is I would say it's a relatively newer topic. This is called fractal. It's been around for well, it's been around for a while, and it got re people got really excited by this topic in the last 5 to 6 years, but I suppose compared to many other topics in condensed matter, it's still newer. So for today's talk, I just want to introduce the topic to you. Sorry. So sometimes I do an overview talk. Giving a general broad introduction to the topic, but I think today I'm going to take a slightly different approach. I want to tell you in particular about one model among this whole class of fractal models. And Tim, excuse me, sorry.
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, sorry, I just wonder if I can see some people's face. Sorry, I have this problem with Zoom that if I don't see anyone's face, I
Oh
don't know who I'm
sure, no
talking to. I'm
problem.
so
Yeah, I'm
sorry about
on.
this. Even when I'm teaching, I have to ask some students to keep their video on. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
very helpful. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
Thank
no
you.
problem.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, since otherwise I just stammer and I don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, thank you. Great. Okay. So today I'm going to tell you in particular about one model, and this is a very prototypical model actually for fractal models, and if you read the literature, a lot of papers are about this model because this is a particularly simple model and it's a nice model and it captures a lot of the very important and exotic properties about fractal. So hopefully through this particular model, I'll be able to introduce to you some of the most important features to fractal. And of course, the whole field is much bigger than this, and it's much bigger than what I'm going to tell you about. But hopefully through this model, you can have a sense of why, first of all, why they're very exotic, and second is what are the important features that people are looking at, and why people are excited. Okay, so as the title suggests, it's called the foliation structure in fractal models. So of course, I'll have to explain what is this idea of foliation. So I'll try to introduce this more mathematical concept into our understanding of these quantum many-body models and show you how they might play a role in our understanding of these models. So first of all, let me thank my collaborators, in particular, Zheng Han is the mathematician who taught me about foliation structure. Wilbur is a student in my group who was leading the project. And Kevin is the postdoc who also contributed greatly to the project. And finally, we have a very talented undergraduate student, Nand Kapoor. Sorry, I spelled his name wrong. It's PAL. I'm so sorry, it's PAL. Nand Kapoor from IIT, and he did the part of the work that I'm going to cover in the later of this talk, which is about putting screw defects into these fractal models. Okay, so let me get started. Okay, so as promised, this is the model. This is the so-called X-cube model. And it was proposed in 2016 in a paper by Saga Vijay, Zhou and Ha, and Liang Fu. It has a very simple and nice mathematical structure. And by simple, I don't mean that it's close to experiment. It's not. It's simple in the sense that it's an exactly solvable toy model, and it looks kind of nice. Okay, so here's the model. This is a three-dimensional lattice model. So imagine a three-dimensional cubic lattice. And then the qubits are put on each of the edges of the cubic lattice. Okay, so one qubit per edge. And then the pictures I drew here, they are the Hamiltonian terms. So the first one is a cube term of all 12 sigma x around the cube, and it's a tensor product of everything. And then the other three terms are centered at vertices, and they involve the sigma z operators. So x and z, of course, are the poly x and poly z operators for the qubit. So for the vertex term, there are three of them, each oriented in a particular plane at the vertex. So the nice thing about this Hamiltonian is that, of course, it's very strongly interacting and it's many body interacting. But the nice thing about this Hamiltonian is that, that once you sum all these terms up and you find that all the terms commute. So all the terms commute with each other and they're made of poly operators. And then the algebra is particularly simple. We can do exact calculation, for example, for the ground state, excited states, and et cetera. Okay, so because all the Hamiltonian terms commute, so the ground state can be chosen to satisfy the condition that all Hamiltonian terms have eigenvalue one. And then we can, and that tells us that this model is gapped because all the excitations have to flip at least one of the Hamiltonian terms, so the energy gap is at least two. And then the question we can ask is, if we put the model on a three-dimensional torus, so periodic boundary condition in all three directions, then what is the ground state degeneracy? So this is an exercise that we do for a lot of the topological model that we know about. So we can similarly ask this question for the XQ model. And then because, of course, all the terms commute, so we can calculate that. And it turns out that the ground state degeneracy is rather complicated. In particular, the log of the ground state degeneracy goes as 2 times Lx plus 2 times Ly plus 2 times Lz minus 3. And here, Lx, Ly, and Lz, they measure the linear size of the system, of the cubic lattice in each of the three directions. Okay. So you can see that the ground state degeneracy, first of all, is very big. And secondly, it's very big in a very particular way, and that it scales exponentially with the linear size of the system. And this is a key feature, actually, that I'll try to make sense of in my talk. That is, how do we understand the ground state degeneracy? How do we make sense of it? And how do we even predict this kind of scaling given this model on some particular lattice? And as I mentioned at the beginning of my talk a little bit, that what we want to do is to, of course, put the model on different geometry, on different manifold, and even in the presence of some lattice defect, and see how the ground state degeneracy changes and how we can calculate and understand what we calculate. And how all that is related to something called the foliation structure of the model. Okay, so this is about the ground state degeneracy, but of course, another very important aspect of this model is how excitations are made. In these kind of commuting stabilizer models, excitations can be made by flipping some of the Hamiltonian terms. For example, we can flip the vertex terms like this, and I have colored them with different colors to indicate that they're oriented in different directions. And the type of excitation obtained by flipping these terms are the so-called linear excitation. Now I'll explain that name in a minute. And just suppose that we apply a string of sigma x like this along a one-dimensional line and apply a sigma x like this. And when we do that, we notice that we will violate some of the vertex term at the end. So here it's a purple term and a red term. And here's another a purple term and red term. So at the end of this string operator, we have a pair of excitations. And similarly, we can do this along another direction or even along the third direction. So we have three directions to do this. And we see that we can similarly make a pair of excitations, but the excitations made by string operator in different directions look different. In particular, there are combinations of different vertex operators at the end of the strings. So this is actually a small feature, but it's a very important feature. It's saying that if we try to create a pair of excitations in one direction and then make it to turn, like try to drag it to turn, it won't, because the excitation changes into a different type of excitation. And what happens is that some of the excitation gets deposited at the corner. And because of that, we say that these type of excitations, they are linear excitations, meaning that they can only move in one dimensional line. And if you try to drag them into a different direction, well, you cannot. Something has to happen at the corner, and basically they are constrained to move along the one-dimensional line. So this is one type, the linear excitation. And then we have, of course, the cube terms in the Hamiltonian, and we can flip that as well. And those terms can be flipped by applying sigma z over a disk. Let's say we take a rectangular region and apply sigma z on the vertical edges sticking out of the rectangular region. And then what we find is that four of the cube terms gets violated. They have a higher energy, so they become point excitations. Well, all the other terms are fine. So by applying this membrane operator, we are actually only creating excitations at the four corners. And we're creating them four at a time. So every time we do this, we create four excitations. And then because of that, each of these cube excitations cannot move by themselves, because that would require a two-particle process, but such kind of process basically doesn't exist. And this is what we call a fracton excitation, meaning that these excitations, once they're created, they can't quite move. They just get stuck, okay? So these are a very exotic feature of fractal models. Of course, it's actually the defining feature of what people call fracton. Fracton is the name used for this general class of models, which host point excitation with constrained motion. So usually when we have point excitation, like we have an electron excited from the valence band to the conduction band, once it gets excited, it can move. Right. And even we have a topological model, we have quasi-particle excitations. Once they are created and they're deconfined, they're free to move. A fractal model is special in that it hosts these kind of point excitations that once created, it cannot move in all directions. Sometimes they don't move at all. Sometimes they're constrained to move in a submanifold of the model. So that's what makes fractal model weird. Together with the fact that some of them might have ground state degeneracy that goes exponentially with system size. Okay. Right, so another type of excitation is what we call the planar excitations, and the planar excitations in this XQ model shows up in the following way. For example, if we take two of the fractons and we make so-called fracton dipole, meaning that we have a pair of them, and this fracton dipole, it turns out it can move in a two-dimensional plane. So this fracton, a pair of fracton, a fracton dipole, is what we call a planar excitation. Its motion is still constrained because we have a three-dimensional model, but the planar only moves in a two-dimensional plane. Okay. And another possibility is that we have a pair of lineons. So if we have a two lineons of the same species, and then we take a pair of them, then this pair can move along perpendicular to the direction of the line that connects them. So these are the planar excitations. So you can see that the X-Skill model exhibits a range of weird properties, the exponential ground state degeneracy, point excitations with limited motion, et cetera. And this is just something that we don't quite see previously. Our understanding of phases or even about topological order is does not quite allow this kind of feature. So the question is basically, what is the kind of order that's captured by this X-cube model? So it's very tempting to say that this order is in some sense topological. Of course, it depends on how you define topological. But for example, for quantum information people, in a lot of context, topological means the existence of logical operator that is of global scale. For example, if you want to map from one ground state to another ground state, and if you need to apply a string operator that goes from all across one direction, that its length has to be microscopic, then this is topological. And this is indeed the case for the XQ model. For the XQ model, we mentioned the huge ground state degeneracy. And the huge ground state degeneracy is indeed very robust in the sense that if you want to map between the ground states, you have to apply global string operators like this. So it's either a string of X or a string of Z, like that. And because of that, the ground state degeneracy is robust against any local perturbation because none of the ground state can be connected to each other through local operation. It has to be non-local like this. Okay. So in this sense, it is topological, but on the other hand, we can more carefully compare it to some of the other topological order that we're familiar with and see some immediate differences. For example, the most popular topological model that we talk about, one of them is the so-called toric code. And toric code has a version that's very similar to the XQ model. It can be defined on a square lattice in two dimension with exactly solvable, strongly interacting Hamiltonians like this. One of the term is a product of sigma z, and the other term is a product of sigma x. And the Hamiltonian is a sum over all these terms, and all these terms commute with each other so that we can calculate the ground state degeneracy, we can figure out about excitation, et cetera, right? And so like XQ model, all terms commute, and we can set periodic boundary condition and put it on a two-dimensional torus, and then find out that the ground state degeneracy on a two-dimensional torus is equal. The log is equal to 2. The ground state degeneracy is 4. And then you take the log, it becomes 2. And the 2 ground state degeneracy, of course, very similarly comes from these non-trivial global string operators. One is x and one is z. And the excitation is such that if the string operator has n, then one of them create a pair of the e excitation, the other pair creates a pair of x m excitation. And these are, of course, the key feature of the topological order, and they have rating statistics, blah, blah, blah. I will go into details about that, but these are the most important things that we learn from the toric code to capture its topological order. But then, of course, The square lattice version is the most popular version. For example, you might learn in a condensed matter or quantum information class for the toric code. But what we also know is that the toric code doesn't have to be defined on a square lattice. We can just draw any two-dimensional graph, a random graph even, And then on any random graph, we can define the target code. For example, on this one, we can take any plaquette and put a sigma x term, and take any vertex and put a sigma z term. And they always commute, and everything still works out. And in particular, the ground state degeneracy is always 2. The log of the ground state degeneracy is always 2 on a two-dimensional torus, no matter what kind of lattice or even random graph you put on this two-dimensional torus. And that is, of course, the fundamental key feature indicating the topological order of this particular model. Basically, it's saying that there's some vector space associated with just the topology of the manifold, while it cares about nothing else of the details of the lattice. And that is why this can be associated to a topological quantum field theory. And the topological, this word in a topological quantum field theory, is in a much stronger sense than the topological that I mentioned, which is related to non-trivial global logical operators. So well, then we can come back and look at XQ model and ask, oh, well, can we do similar things for the XQ model, right? Can we talk about topological order in this model in a similar sense? For example, can we put the model on different lattices and on different 3D manifolds? And can we see how the property, and in particular, the ground state degeneracy, depends on the topology of the three-dimensional manifold? Or even can we come up with a TQFT for the model? Well, it's not very obvious. For example, let's take this different lattice, not a cubic lattice anymore, but a cylindrical triangular lattice. And it's not obvious how to put the Hamiltonian terms on this lattice such that all the terms still commute. For example, we can take, we can take this body term and put sigma x over it, over this green one. And then we can still put a vertex term here of sigma z on this red one. But these two terms only overlap at one location, meaning that they would anti-commute if we just do things naively like this. So it's not obvious at all how to directly put the XQ model on different lattices, not to mention different manifolds. And this is where the foliation idea comes in. Of course, the whole thing started after I gave a talk at KITP, and Zheng Han came and asked me how to put the model on different manifold. And I have no answer for him at that point. And then later what we realized is that we need something called the foliation structure. Okay, so this is a picture of what people in geology call a foliation. So you just take a big rock and you see all these layered structure of deposition in this big rock, and that's called foliation. And mathematically, what foliation is referring to is that you have a three-dimensional manifold, and then you can cut up the three-dimensional manifold with parallel planes, with parallel what people call leaves. So all these leaves, they're two-dimensional and they don't intersect with each other. And that's a foliation structure. Okay, so what we realize is that if we want to properly put the XQ model onto a different manifold, what we need is a foliation structure. And in particular, we need to divide the three-dimensional manifold into parallel planes. For example, the XY or YZ or ZX plane, Each set of them, each set of these planes, they give a foliation structure to the three-dimensional manifold, to the 3D torus in particular. And then there's this notion of total foliation. And total foliation means that for a three-dimensional manifold, you have three sets of such foliations, and they transversely intersect with each other. Okay, so just like X, Y, and Y, Z, and Z, X planes for 3D torus. So this cubic lattice is actually one of the ways that we can set up a foliation structure for a three-dimensional torus. And then what we realize is that we can do this to other 3D manifolds as well. For example, if you have a three-dimensional sphere, S3, which is characterized by this formula in a four-dimensional coordinate system. And then we can choose the three sets of leaves to be leaves set at a constant coordinate for either x, y, and z. Of course, if we set one of the coordinates to be constant, what we are left with is the S2, the two-dimensional spherical leaf. And then we can have three sets of them. So each leaf is a two sphere. And here is a picture of one of the two sphere. And the red and green lines on this two sphere is the intersection of all the other leaves with this leaf. Okay, so there are these Y leaves and the Z leaves, and they intersect with this X leaf along these circles.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sure, of course.
Yeah, I was just wondering whether mathematical definition of foliation requires it to be regular, like a periodic or some kind of a lattice, or it can be just like an arbitrary set of surfaces with arbitrary distance, and like what are the requirements?
Yeah, great question. I haven't talked about that very carefully here, because foliation, of course, is a big topic in topology, and there are different definitions. And we are using a version that's most convenient for us. And I might come to that later, but let me just tell you for now that we want a foliation that's called compact and singular. Compact, singular foliation. And for mathematicians in a lot of context, they are considering non-compact and non-singular foliation, meaning that each of the leaf can be non-compact. It can go on, wrap around forever. And then, but they don't want any singularity, meaning that all the leaves are two-dimensional. But for us, for example, you can see in this case, some of the leaves are going to be singular. For example, some of them are going to shrink into a point. Okay. And for mathematicians, when they talk about foliation, they have in mind that it's continuous set of leaves. So there's, they don't discretize things. They just continuously imagine that there's these all these layers continuously fill the three-dimensional manifold. But for us, because what we are trying to do is to set up a lattice model. So we actually will eventually choose a discrete set of the leaves. And that's why we can accommodate singularity, because we'll just not choose that singular leaf. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's there are different definitions, but we are considering this compact and possibly singular set of foliation, but we will avoid the singularity by choosing a discrete set of leaves and set up our lattice model.
But are distances important for you, like the fact that they're equidistant?
No, I don't think so. We need is that we have some discrete set of leaves and they intersect. Yeah, I don't care that much about distance.
And they can fluctuate, meaning they don't have to be flat. They can be kind of a warped surfaces, arbitrary surfaces, as long as they're non-singular in the sense of there's a, like a height function, like description.
They don't have to be flat. For example, here, there are two spheres. But I haven't thought very carefully if they, like, do crazy things. I think things will be fine. And then they're non-singular just because we want to make sure each leaf is indeed two-dimensional and they can intersect with others at one-dimensional intersection lines.
Okay.
And so on and so forth.
Okay. Thank you.
If they're pointed, yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe in a minute I'll show you how we put the degrees of freedom on here, and that becomes more clear.
Thank you.
Okay. Right, so this is for S3, and another one is S2 times S1. This is another three-dimensional manifold characterized by a formula like this. And then similarly, we can choose a set of leaves. In particular, we can choose two sets of torus leaves and one set of two sphere leaves. And this is one of the spherical leaves. Again, the red and green circles are the intersection lines. So this gives us a total foliation of this S2 times S1 manifold. Okay, and the good thing about having this total foliation is that then we have, in some sense, an XYZ direction at every point. So these are, of course, not different manifolds, and the leaves might twist around, but at least locally, we have a sense of which foliation it comes from. So there's a sense of XYZ direction. And because of that, we can color the six edges going into a vertex. And that's where the three sets of leaves intersect with each other. And we have a notion of which two are in the same direction and the three sets of them. And then the bodies may not be cubes. The bodies might have weird shapes like this, this one, and even with three edges like that one. But that's okay. We'll take whatever body that we get from this foliation. And as Leo mentioned, that we need to have some special type of foliation, which is called the compact singular foliation. And it's compact because we want to get a finite lattice model. If we have leaves that wraps around and around, then it's non-compact 2D surface, then we don't have a finite lattice model to start with. Because for us, we're very simple-minded condensed matter people. So we need to start from a finite size lattice model and then scale it up until we reach thermodynamic limit. So we require the leaves to be compact. And we can accommodate singularity because we just avoid singularity by picking a short distance cutoff. And then from there, we'll get the lattice model.
Xie, can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
So if I have a 3D lattice with the vertices having degree less than six, are you saying that you cannot have foliation structure on those lattices?
Right, good question. So you're saying just take any lattice. How do I know if it can come from a foliation structure, right?
Right.
Or maybe I can answer your question in the other direction. That is, if I have one of these foliations, do I always have the vertex of degree six? And that is actually not true because I think some of the leaves don't always intersect with each other. So I think it might be possible that I may need to take it back. Sorry. So let me say this. So what I'm presenting to you is to extend the original X cube model, which is what we call three foliated. That is, you need three sets of foliation, and then you set up the lattice, and then you define the model. But it's also, there are also like two foliated or four foliated or other foliated fractal models, just as generalization of the X cube. So in those cases, you might have vertices of higher degree. But for your question of if I just start from a general lattice, whether I can see if there's a foliation structure to it. I'm not sure about that, actually. I don't know how you are given, given the triangular lattice that I showed before. Well, that one might be fine. That one might be a four foliated, but maybe not. Well, sorry, that one has some accidental intersection, so that one might not be okay. But I think it's generally a question that I cannot address right now, which is, if you give me a lattice, how do I figure out if it has a foliation structure? I can start from a foliation structure and give you a lattice.
I see.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, yeah, thanks.
Okay, yeah. Or not answer your question.
So when two leaves join together, if you have two leaves joining into one leaf, like a dislocation line in three dimensions, that would not be an allowed foliation. That's not a foliation.
Oh, that we would call a defect in foliation structure, which is something I will talk about. Yeah, sorry.
Okay. You're not allowing those, or you are?
Not for now, but if I have time to go to the later part of my talk, I'll talk about how we treat defects in these lines.
Thank you. Okay, great.
Right. So the cubic lattice version of this model, of course, is one example of how we can apply the scheme to put a lattice on a 3D torus. We can foliate it with x, y, and y, z, and zx planes, and they intersect out a cubic lattice, and then we put degrees of freedom on the intersection line. We put degrees of freedom on the intersection edges, and then for each body, for each cube, we define a body term. For each vertex, we define three sets of vertex term. And this scheme works for other manifolds as well. So similarly, at vertices, they're still degree six, so we can still define vertex terms like this. But for the bodies, they might look different, but that's okay. We just put sigma x over all the body terms that we can have, and that's it. And by doing that, we can make sure that all the Hamiltonian terms still commute and everything looks nice. So that's, well, trying to do something similar to toric code. We can't do it for an arbitrary graph, but at least we know for some subset of lattice, the set that we construct out of foliation structure, we can still have the Hamiltonian defined. And then the next question is, what is the ground state degeneracy and how do we make sense of it, right? For toric code, it's two, but let's see what happens for XQ model. So for example, for XQ model, if we put it on the 3D torus, we know the ground state degeneracy is like that. If it's 3D sphere with spherical foliating leaves, three sets of spherical leaves, the log of the ground state degeneracy is zero, meaning that there's a unique ground state. And then for S2 times S1, if we choose two sets of torus leaf and one set of spherical leaf, the log of the ground state degeneracy goes as 2Lx plus 2Ly minus 1. And so the question is, well, of course, first of all, they're not the same. And just because of the system size dependence, sorry, I don't know why there's an x here. It should be a 2. This is a 2. And just because of the system dependence, even for the same manifold, the ground state degeneracy changes with system size, right? And the question is, of course, how do we understand this? How do we make sense of the linear part of the scaling, and how do we make sense of the constant part of the scaling?
Sorry, another question. Yes. Suppose I take the same manifold, and let's say if I take a different foliating structure, does this behavior necessarily keep unchanged, or?
Yeah, it changes.
Oh, it changes. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
So this is definitely not a topological quantum field theory in the sense that the degeneracy only depends on the manifold. Yeah, it depends on the foliation structure.
I see.
In a sense. Yeah. Thanks. Okay, and the way we try to make sense of it. The first step is to realize that the foliation structure is not just one way to make up a lattice so you can put the Hamiltonian on top of it. It's also something that's quite intrinsic to the model, meaning that even if we're not dealing with an exactly solar model, even if we move away a little bit, there's a deeper foliation structure to this model. In the following sense, that if we compare the S-cube model on two lattices of slightly different size. One is Lx, Ly, Lz. The other is Lx, Ly, Lz plus one. So just differ in the z direction by lattice constant one. Then these two models are obviously different because they will have different ground state degeneracy. But if we insert a layer of two-dimensional target code into the smaller side. So this is all periodic boundary conditions. So what I'm doing is to insert a layer somewhere in the middle of the model. And then I can do some smooth connection such that I can make the two sides the same, meaning that they're exactly the same model. And to just show you that I'm not, I'm doing some legitimate operation, the smooth deformation that I talk about is a bunch of local unitary transformation. So we take these two exactly solid model and we apply a bunch of local unitary transformation. And this local unitary transformation is the so-called control knot gate. So it's one of the gate that people use to do quantum computation. It's this four dimensional matrix that acts on two qubits. And I'm indicating that by an arrow. And so all these arrows that I draw in this cube, each of them is one of this control knot gate. And we'll do it across the whole plane, connecting this target code with the S cube. And if we do that in a translation invariant way, we'll be able to map whatever is on the left-hand side to the model on the right-hand side. The Hamiltonians exactly match. Okay. And we can do this. Also, of course, in the reverse direction, this is a unitary transformation. We can start from a big model and we can apply the unitary in the reverse way and decouple out a two-dimensional target code and be left with the model on a slightly smaller system size. And we can imagine doing this in the x direction and y direction and z direction, and we can do it in all three directions. And that is this deeper foliation structure that I'm talking about, that there are these hidden layers of two-dimensional topological order inside this X cube. And this is also why I say it's three foliated, that we can do it in three directions, the Z direction, Y direction, X direction. Okay. And that actually let us understand this linear part of the scaling of the log ground state degeneracy. For example, for the three-dimensional torus, where we have two-dimensional torus foliating leaves, the linear part has a coefficient of two, and that's because each of the foliating layers has a hidden two-dimensional toric code. And if it's a two-dimensional toric code on a two-dimensional torus, then the log ground state degeneracy is two, right? So there's a two here. And because we have many layers, so there's a two times Lx and two times Ly, two times Lz, and et cetera. And then if we go to S3, where the foliating leaves are S2, then the linear coefficient becomes zero, because we know that if we put toric code on S2, the ground state degeneracy, the ground state is unique, and the log of the ground state degeneracy is zero. Okay, finally, if we have two sets of torus leaves and one set of spherical leaf, then the torus leaves will give you a prefactor of two and the spherical leaf will give you a prefactor of zero. So everything's just consistent here. So that explains the linear part of the degeneracy. What about the constant part? Well, to understand the constant part, we need to think more carefully, because we can keep removing the layers, but we need to understand what we get in the end. Do we just remove everything? Are we just left with nothing? Or do we get some core that we need to take care of? Well, in terms of, for example, in the case of this 3D torus, we can just do that exercise. We can keep removing layers. And in all three directions, we can do that until we are left with one layer in each set. So x, y, y, z, z, x. Only one in each set. And this somehow, we cannot remove anything more, because this is what we call the minimal structure we can think of it in the following way, that we can think of each plane as containing a Torah code, but the three planes of the Torah code are coupled together. And they're coupled in the way that the Wilson loop, or the sigma x string operator, depending on your language. And the Wilson loop or the sigma x string operator gets combined, meaning that if you want to apply it for one of the plane, you have to apply it for the other plane as well. And so this minimal structure is a coupled a layer of three layers, and they're coupled along their intersection lines. And because of this, the log of the ground state degeneracy has a minus three in it, because if we just have three layers of Torah code, the log of the ground state degeneracy would be six, but then because of the Wilson loop are coupled, so we lose three. So there's a minus three. And moreover, this coupled Wilson loop is exactly what gives rise to the linear excitations, because originally in Torah code, if we have a Wilson loop or if we have the sigma x string operator, we create a pair of these excitations and then they can move in a two-dimensional plane. But now if we have two planes and they intersect and they're coupled along the intersection, then the Wilson loop can only run along the intersection. It cannot turn because they're coupled. And that, and because of that, the linear excitations can only move along the intersection line. Okay, good. And that tells us how to understand the constant part of the log ground state degeneracy for the three-dimensional torus. We said that there's a minus three here. For the three sphere, it's minus zero because the ground state, the linear part is already zero, and there's no non-trivial string operator. There's no non-trivial Wilson loop on each of the S3. So even when they intersect and combine with each other, it doesn't reduce the ground state degeneracy anymore. And finally, for the S2 times S1, there's a minus one part to the log ground state degeneracy because there are two sets of T2 foliating leaves, and they intersect, and at the intersection, the Wilson loop couple and reduce the ground state degeneracy, log ground state degeneracy by one. Okay. So the constant part of the ground state degeneracy depends on the topology of the intersection of the foliating leaves. We need to look at whether it's a non-trivial loop within the original foliating leaves. And if they are, and if they combine together, then they will reduce the ground state degeneracy. Okay. So how am I doing with time? Tim, how much time do I have?
Yeah, maybe like 10, 15 minutes.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah, thank you. So now I want to come to a newer part of our work, which is done last year with this the student Nandkapal. Where we studied screw defect in these lattices, just to make things more interesting and see how we can think about defects. The motivation is that we have been talking about this foliation structure, this layer structure in the model. And whenever you have a layer structure, then it's natural to consider what happens in a screw defect, because screw defect in a lot of cases give you some nice feature when you have a stack. And the picture is that if you have a stack like this, then you can add a screw in the middle. And what a screw does is, of course, they connect all the layers together, and eventually you can flat out the connected planes into a single disk. Right, and that it can lead to some non-trivial feature. For example, back in the days when people study three-dimensional topological insulator, there's a version of a weak topological insulator, basically means that it's equivalent to a set of a stack of two-dimensional topological insulator. But of course, it's usually not so obvious to see that it's a stack, but what we can do is to put a screw through the model. And what people found back in the days is that when you put a screw in the model, then the screw carry gapless edge mode, this helical edge mode of the two-dimensional topological insulator. And that's easy to understand because each of the two-dimensional layers will host a helical edge state. And when we connect them together, and then flatten out, then the edge state goes, one of them goes around the outer edge of the annulus, and the other one goes around the inner edge of the annulus. Of course, the inner edge is still has still a global extent because it extends in the vertical direction. So it is indeed a gapless edge just along the screw. And that is actually a nice way to detect this three-dimensional weak topological insulator. And a similar feature will show up if you switch topological insulator into a chiral topological order, because there will be chiral edge states going around the layers. And when we connect it up and flatten it out, then the chiral edge state goes around the inner and outer edge of the annulus. On the other hand, if we have non-chiral topological states, and then we don't have an edge state, and when we flatten it out, it will become a two-dimensional plane of non-chiral topological states on an annulus. So in this case, we don't expect to see gapless edge states, but we do expect to see something non-trivial, because we know that the fractional excitations of these two-dimensional topological states can either tunnel between the edges, and it can wind around the annulus. So that can give rise to extra ground state degeneracy once you put a screw defect through the layers. Originally, if we just have a stack of two-dimensional topological states with open boundary condition, we don't necessarily expect a ground state degeneracy. But once we put a screw defect through the middle, and then because of this annulus geometry induced, we would expect to see a change, an increase in ground state degeneracy. So now for the SQ model, because we propose that there are these hidden layers of two-dimensional toric code, so the question is, now once we put in a screw defect, do we actually see an extra ground state degeneracy? And that will be an indication of the underlying foliation structure, and potentially this can also be a way to detect foliation structure in other models as well. It might not be an easy way, but conceptually it can be a way. Okay. And so we set out to do the calculation for the screw defect, meaning that we set up a lattice model, including screw defect, and we try to figure out the ground state degeneracy. And of course, the way we've tried to figure it out is through by analyzing the foliation structure in this lattice with defect, and see how the minimum structure look like, and then put everything together, and then get a total ground state degeneracy. So I'll go through this rather quickly. So basically, what we did is to start from open boundary condition, because with a screw defect, we can't do periodic boundary condition anymore. So we first put the system on open boundary condition, in these two sides, but then periodic in the Z direction. And what we realize is that the foliation still goes in three directions, but of course the boundary condition changes. For example, for this one, for this plane, it's periodic in one direction, but open in the other direction. And similarly for this one, while for this XY plane, it's just totally open, right? And that changes the linear part of the ground state degeneracy, because for example, the XY part doesn't contribute to ground state degeneracy at all, while the other one, the coefficient reduced to one because it's open in one of the direction and periodic in the other. And then the minimum structure, so we start from this foliation structure, and then we can again remove the planes one by one. And eventually at the minimum structure, we have three planes coupled together, but the only non-trivial coupling is along the Z direction, where it's a non-trivial circle. And that reduces the ground state degeneracy by one. So very nicely, we see that for open boundary condition with no defect, the ground state degeneracy goes as Lx plus Ly minus one. And this is confirmed by numerics that we do to count the ground state degeneracy of the model. So now with screw defect, it's a little bit different, but not that much different. Basically, we still have foliation layers in the vertical planes, the YZ and XZ planes, and they look pretty much the same. While the foliation in the XY plane, because of the screw defect, they actually are connected together, right? And they have an open boundary condition on the side. So if we just look at the foliation structure coming from the XZ and YZ plane, we see that because they have mixed open and periodic boundary condition, so each of the layer contribute a one to the log ground state degeneracy. So we have an Lx plus Ly part for the linear scaling. And then we can look at how the spiral leaf contribute. The spiral leaf, of course, if we flatten it out, we see that it's an annulus for the toric code, and it should contribute to a log two ground state degeneracy of one. So now if we put everything naively together, it will be Lx plus Ly. if we just consider how it's different from the open boundary condition, we would say that maybe there's an extra one for the ground state degeneracy just coming from the spiral leaf. And we see that it's actually a slightly more tricky than that. Basically, what we need to do is to literally do the calculation for the screw defect case where we take away all the foliating leaves and remain a minimum structure. But here, the minimum structure looks like this. It looks like a whole cylinder of things, that it has two XZ leaves, two YZ leaves, and then XY leaf is a spiral leaf that just goes around and goes up. And then and we can consider the topological process that can happen around this minimal structure. And that will tell us about the ground state degeneracy for the minimal structure. And what we know is that we can try to move a linear in the minimal structure, and we can try to, let's say, wind it around the screw defect. But we know that a linear doesn't like to be turned, right? It doesn't want to move in a different direction. So if we try to move in a different direction, we run into trouble. But this can be compensated by some tunneling process between the layers. So if we have these vertical edges that tunnel between the spiral layers, then actually we can make a linear to go around. But also because of this tunneling structure, this process can only be done for even height, but not for all height. So for even height, we have an extra ground state degeneracy due to the winding of the linear around the defect. And on the other hand, if we have a pair of the linear, we have a linear dipole, and if we make it wind around the minimum structure, the cylinder, then we see what happens is that the horizontal part of the tunneling actually all cancels out, and then we have this vertical set of logical operator, and that gives us an extra add plus one for the log ground state degeneracy. And this has a nice physical interpretation as well, because if you see that we take a linear dipole, we wind it around the cylinder and it comes back. And what actually happens is that effectively we're taking the linear and make it hop by a step of two. Make it hop one step in the vertical direction. So it's actually like giving rise to extra motion around the screw defect. So the existence of screw defect can actually eliminate some of the motional constraint on the linear, because originally it can only move in one direction. Now it can even hop in the vertical direction. So put everything together, we see that the total ground state degeneracy changes from the ground state degeneracy for open boundary condition, which is the Lx plus Ly minus one part. This is just from open boundary condition. And then we put in the screw defect, we have an extra one, and we have a potentially another extra one. And this red part depends on the even and oddness of the system in the Z direction. So indeed, we see that there's an increase of ground state degeneracy, and the amount by which it increases will depend on the even oddness of the system size. Okay, I guess I'm out of time. So to summarize, I told you about this X-cube model. I only talk about this one model, and I talk about this one model put on different manifolds, how we need to set up a foliation structure to do it. And moreover, I talk about the model on open boundary condition and also with screw defect. And my focus is on how to understand the ground state degeneracy. And the way we understand ground state degeneracy is by combining the foliation structure of the model and also the minimal structure. And the minimal structure we know comes from the couple layer of the minimum number of layers coming from each foliation set. So of course, this is just for one model, and we can try to think about other fractal models, at least other models with a foliation structure, and even non-exactly so models. That would be very hard, of course, numerically. It's a three-dimensional model, but conceptually, this screw defect property can still work for non-exactly so models, and with even with disorder. And finally, we can ask if that has, what does that tell us about a field theory description? Yeah, that's going a little bit too far from my talk, so I'll just end up here. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jay, for the very interesting talk. Maybe I could just start with a question. So regarding this open question of other fracton models, so for you know, the more complicated things like Haas code, I was wondering if there's even like any mathematical notion of a fractal foliation for a 3D bulk. Like, does that concept exist in mathematics or?
Yeah, good question. The short answer is, I don't know. And the longer version of the answer is that there's some similarity between this, what I call the renormalization group transformation for the XQ model and the Haas code model. Mm-hmm. By renormalization, I mean that you take model of different size and then you put in this extra toric code and then you combine them with local unitary transformations. So for the XQ model, we can think of the following process. We can think of a model that's twice the size or maybe eight times the size. And then compared to a system of, well, let's say 1/8 of the size. Sorry, we can basically compare a system of double the size. And then the difference between them will be a bunch of layers, these toric code. And we can do similar things for the Haas code. And the difference would be some other fractal model, which is 3D, but what's similar between a set of 2D layers and that extra 3D fractal model that comes out when you do the process for the Haas code is that when you compare those models with half of themselves, they become two copies of themselves. How should I say this? So if you take a bunch of decoupled layers and you take 2n such layers and you compare to n such layers, obviously that's two copies of this smaller number of layers. Right? You just decompose into even layers and odd layers. And that turns out to be true also for this, this extra fractal model coming out of Haas code. So in that very vague sense, they are similar. And but the question is, of course, for Haas code, the thing that comes out of the RG process is still very intrinsically 3D, and we have no way to understand it as a stack of anything. And it's even more complicated than Haas code, as you may well know. So I don't know how much more can be said about that. We can try to define that as foliation, but I don't think that's helpful in any way. Wow.
Yeah. But I guess what you were describing was like a RG procedure where you're always mapping a cubic lattice into like a bigger cubic lattice, right? But is there like some different foliation technique which is more like, I don't know, more reflection of the fractal logical operators in the Hog code?
Yeah. I don't know. Like what? Yeah. Yeah, good question. I don't know. We don't want to put it on a fractal lattice, but Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know what. So at least I don't know what it would be nice to come up with ideas to try. As you said, something more compatible with the fractal structure, but I don't know what.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if, you know, mathematicians have already explored like exotic foliations in 3D, right? Like,
with fractals?
Yeah, does that even
make sense? Yeah, I wonder. I don't know. You need to find some mathematicians and ask them. Well, if you naively think about it, if you take fractals and try to stack it with fractals, I don't know how to get a 3D lattice or just to get a 3D manifold out of it. Because you can take a fractal with nominal dimension too.
Mm-hmm.
There are fractals with nominal dimension too. But I don't know how to stack them in a way. To go back to the 3D regular structure. Yeah, good question.
Okay, any other questions from the audience?
Yeah, actually I have a question. For the screw dislocations, can I just regard them as a line defect where there are some line on or a combination of line on condensate along that line? So once you go through, then line on becomes another flavor of line on. That is why they can go up to another direction.
In a sense, exactly. Oh, let me pull up the picture again. That's a great point. This picture, right?
Yeah. Just have some line or whatever, any on condensate along the line defect, whatever defect, then actually the mobility or the directional of the particle, quasi-particle can change merely because once you touch it, any on condensate, so one type of fuse into another type.
There might be a way to think of it like this, but I haven't thought it very carefully, I have to admit. So for us here, the line on can go around only because there's this tunneling process. But of course, that's something special to the screw defect that usually you can't just take it to another layer and have this tunneling. So yeah, it might be interesting to formulate it like that, and it would we would have a better understanding of what kind of defect can allow extra degeneracy like that. So that's a great point, but I haven't thought very carefully about it.
Yeah, thanks.
Sangsik has a question.
Yeah, so if one starts with some general 2D topological state and try to glue them into 3D state using similar strategy that you explained, is it possible for general states, or is it something specific to the toric chord?
Yeah, good question. So I had a paper with Mike Hermley, and then Mike Hermley has some other papers. So this is related to something we call the couple layer construction, just like you said, that you can take layers of 2D states and then couple them along the intersection line. Mike Hermley and his collaborators, they call it the cage net construction. And so I think the construction works for a lot of other string net models, which have string operator that's like a Z2. So not just X cube, not just target code, but you can even extend it to cases like the Ising model, non-abelian Ising model. But on the other hand, they don't always follow the exact foliation structure like the XQ model, for example, like the Ising case. It's actually much more complicated than the abelian case that I told you about. I believe that if you take a abelian string net and do things like this, it might still have a similar structure, but for non-abelian ones, I think it's still very open as to what's exactly happening there. We can write down the model as an exactly solved model, but then you can ask whether you can take out layers like that. It's not obvious because the way we take out layers is by local unitary. When you put the layers together into the 3D model, you actually do some condensation. You actually couple them very strongly. And then something condenses to dry them into a 3D model. So it's not immediately obvious, but that's a good way of thinking of how to extend this discussion to
us. So are there examples where this constant minus constant is different from what you had in the toric code example?
You're referring to the non-abelian case, or?
Yes, yeah.
Right. So the non-abelian one, my impression is that even the linear part doesn't quite scale like a regular linear part.
I see.
So it's much more tricky.
But are there linear parts?
It doesn't grow as nicely. So the linear part means that once you increase the size of the system, the ground state degeneracy grow by a multiple, right? But for the non-abelian one, it doesn't work like that. It's not like you increase the system size by one and then the ground state degeneracy multiplied by some factor. And that indicates that the foliation structure might not work, or it might not, at least not work in this straightforward way.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not much more I can say about it.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Shay?
Oh, quick question. So do you believe that there is no true continuum limit in this case? Like somehow you have to sacrifice at least one direction according to this foliation picture?
Yeah, that's a great question. and it's something that get people confused and excited at the same time, of course. If I just want to answer the question in a very lazy way, I would say that obviously the continuous limit will have problem because the ground state degeneracy depends on system size. Well, then what can you do about that? If you just directly take the thermodynamic limit, you will have infinite ground state degeneracy. On the other hand, people are coming up with ways to deal with that. For example, to put in by hand a foliation structure or to introduce some discontinuity, but not to the level of lattice discontinuity into a continuous field and then reproduce the effect. And there are a lot of work actually by Kevin and you. and Natty Seiberg. And to address this issue, it's not, I don't think the answer is complete yet, but people are making progress.
But it looks like this -3 part still Yeah, I'm still a little confused about that in the continuum limit, how to.
Well, so I would say that this you're very right that this minus three part might be a problem, but just this linear scaling part.
Right.
Linear scaling part is in a sense that already shows up if you have a stack of fractional.
Right.
So if we feel that we should be able to properly describe a stack of fractional quantum Hall, then we should be able to deal with this linear scaling part. And then we just, of course, we need to pay the extra effort to take care of the minus three part. But well, of course, these are just hand waving talking. I don't have anything concrete to say.
No, thank you.
Actually, the minus three part is something that we can hope to be able to describe in terms of some continuum theory, isn't it? That's something that is independent of the system size.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's a good thought. Yeah.
Yeah, so if we say okay, we're okay with whatever happens with a stack of 2D fractional quantum Hall, and let's just describe what's beyond that. Like you said, this minus three part. Let's just try to come up with ways to describe what's fractonic instead of just the layers.
Yeah. There is something that is invariant under RG transformation.
Exactly. I think that's a great point. That's a great point. But that requires us to somehow formulate a theory that's like you model something and then you describe the remaining part as a continuous theory.
Yeah.
I think if eventually it might just work like that.
Some kind of ghost degrees freedom that kills the physical degrees freedom.
Sorry, what?
So it's a minus degrees freedom. So it's kind of ghost.
Oh, you think it's ghost, yeah. Well, that's because you removed the last layer altogether, right? But yeah, in some sense. Yeah, that would be very interesting to see.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for the great discussion and also the wonderful talk. So I think we'll close the session and let's virtually all thank Shay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See all of you.